JLO 1690 AM here in Montreal.
You are listening to CJLO News. The NDG Art Hop took place over the weekend of May 24th and 25th. The Art Hop is an event where artists in the borough open up their studios or homes to the public. People walk the streets of NDG and discover the many artists who work and create, usually behind closed doors. This year, there were 19 artists who opened their studios to the public, showing a diverse range of art from photography to miniature and model building to painting and sculpture. Cynthia Davis is a frequent Art Hop participant. CJLO met her in her studio. Her walls were lined with paintings and mixed media collage work.
It's just one of those lovely things where we can that supports me as a local artist and my fellow artists, and we get to meet a lot of people from the community and show people what we're working on in our quiet little studios.
It's in Davis's studio where artists meet at the beginning of the Art Hop to plan the weekend and learn about each other.
I open my studio for the meetings of the Art Hop, so I get to meet most of the participants, and I to see what they're working on, and we all try to support each other's amazing work, like Scott McLeod and Tamar Cohn and Train Man, and there's such interesting work being done in the neighborhood.
Kata Androdi is a first-time Art Hop participant, only discovering her gift and passion for photography 5 years ago. Androdi's studio is in her home. She opened her doors to allow people to see her photography and take a look at her process.
It's my first time. It's an amazing initiative, bringing together artists locally and meeting the community and getting to know each other and getting to know people from the community, NDG, and from outside of the community. So I'm really happy and proud of being part of it.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. Man, what a week we have in store in the world of sports, and I'm so excited for today's show. If you're new to the program, my name is Tommy Lane, and every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern right here on CJLO 1690 AM, we discuss everything going on in the world of sports. And if you missed the program by any chance, check out our Instagram at the Tommy John Show after the show. It will be uploaded every Monday evening to the Instagram if you miss anything. So thank you guys for listening. And what a week we have coming up in the NHL, in the NBA, in the world of tennis. Just so much going on right now. We're kind of out of the dry spell. We're entering a bad one after 2 weeks from now, because then the NHL and the NBA will be over. Then if you're a golf fan, it's good. Maybe tennis, baseball. But three of the four major sports will not be up and running. So it's on this program, it's going to be a lot of NFL talk, getting ready for training camp, a lot of golf, a lot of tennis. So, but luckily, we still probably have two shows left, maybe three, depending on how long those series go, of the NBA and NHL playoffs. So we'll start off with the NHL, and the Stanley Cup Finals kick off on Wednesday in Edmonton at 8 o'clock, Florida and Edmonton. And last time we were on the show, we were previewing this final. It was pretty much, at that point, it was 3-0 Florida, and ended up winning in 5. And it was at least 2-1 for Edmonton. Yeah, it was 3-0 for Florida, I believe, and 2-0 for Edmonton. Or 2-1 for Edmonton. And we had just a feeling it was heading in that direction. And okay, Carolina got a game in Florida, ended up losing in 5, in just a wild game 5. And in Edmonton, took care of business in both game 4 and game 5. And here we are. The rematch we all wanted once we got to this stage in the playoffs. When it was Dallas, Carolina, Edmonton, and Florida, we all wanted the rematch. Nothing against Carolina or Dallas, but we want McDavid. We want Draisaitl. We want those players. We want Barkov. We want Tkachuk. We want Marchand. Once your team's out of it, to say you didn't want this final, once we were down to the four teams in the conference finals, would be crazy. And last year's playoffs were so crazy, especially that final when Florida's up 3-0, Edmonton fight all the way back. In the longest Stanley Cup final with distance, it took like 5-6 hours for teams to travel. I know Vancouver, Boston was up there too, they were showing. But man, it was taking a lot out of those players, and Edmonton, it would have been easy for them to just, hey, we're getting swept, it's not our year. But note, they win game 4, they went down to Florida, won game 5, came all the way back home to Edmonton to win game 6, and then in game 7, just a hard-checking game, Florida gets it done. But that series should have told us a lot about the Edmonton Oilers, because we have seen it here in this postseason. They're resilient, and they don't give up, and they're going to fight to the end. For the 100th time, I'll mention this Kings series in round 1. Down 2-0, looks like they're getting swept. They were trailing in game 3. They fought all the way back. Game 4 took LA to overtime. And they tied the game late with Bouchard to send it to overtime with 3 minutes left, or they're going to be down 3-1 to the Kings. And then in overtime, they totally outplayed the Kings, won that game, and it changed the series. And since game 3 of that LA series, the Oilers have been the best team in the playoffs, and I think Florida included. Now, you can look at it matchup-wise that the Leafs are a better team than Vegas or Dallas, but I would disagree on that. I would heavily disagree on that. Vegas weren't playing great, but a lot of people had them going to the final, and the Dallas Stars took down Colorado in a crazy series. Colorado, are they as good as Toronto? I think so. And another thing people need to realize, the Dallas Stars were getting healthier. They got Robertson back. They got Heiskanen back. This wasn't the Stars team in the first round. And this Stars team went on to beat the President Trophy winner Winnipeg Jets rather comfortably. And Edmonton took care of them in 5. So if you want to go by who's playing better, it's a coin flip, but Edmonton doesn't have any 7-game series. And the Leafs took Florida 7. And now we can talk about the Panthers' performances in those huge games on the road in Games 5 and in Game 7, but you can easily make the case that's just the Leafs not showing up. But credit Florida. They're a hard-nosed team that are defending Stanley Cup champions, and to me, it's a coin flip. What they did to Carolina and what they did in the first round to Tampa was a huge, huge wake-up call to the rest of the league, because Florida was not looking great coming into the postseason. They're adding pieces, adding Seth Jones. Oh, does Marchand fit in the lineup? How's this all going to work? And for the puck drop of Game 1 against the Lightning, they took off. Took care of the Lightning comfortably. A great series with the Leafs, 7 games back and forth. But in the most important games, games 5 and 7 on the road and games 3 and 4 at home when you're down 2-0 and 2-1, they were the much better team. And then we all saw what they did to Carolina last week, over the last 2 weeks. So to me, it's a coin flip series. And people will look to McDavid, look to Draisaitl, saying they have the two best players. Sasha Barkov, oh my God, Alexander Barkov, just unbelievable. He is the best two-way center in the NHL right now. And he would probably be leading the Conn Smythe rankings for Florida. Sam Bennett's right there too, Bobrovsky's right there. Verhaeghe's been good, Marchand's been great. Lindell, the problem is with Florida, there's just so many guys who've contributed. And with the time off, you wonder if Tkachuk's going to be more healthy, which would be great for Florida. But what this series is going to come down to is, are the big players going to show up? Is Barkov going to show up? Is Tkachuk going to show up? Is Bennett going to show up? Reinhardt? We know McDavid and Draisaitl are. But can the surrounding cast continue doing what they're doing? Because Edmonton's supporting cast, not to say they didn't show up last year, but last year it was the McDavid Draisaitl show with a bit of Zach Hyman, Bouchard on the running the point on the power play, and that was pretty much it from an offensive standpoint. This year, they're getting contributions from everyone. Now, the Zach Hyman loss is a big one. He was hitting everything that moved. He was one of their best players in the postseason. So losing him for the remainder of the playoffs is a huge, huge loss. But Evander Kane's been remarkable. Nugent Hopkins, even Draisaitl was saying after the game, he's been our best player in that Dallas series. He's been unbelievable. Look, Connor Brown, Trent Frederick, just these guys that are showing up in the bottom six that are helping McDavid and Draisaitl out, which they did not have last year. And one thing that they're doing much better than they did last year as well is defend. Darnell Nurse seems to have found his game. Bouchard seems to have found his game. And they add Matthias Ekholm back into that mix now. He played in Game 5, so he'll be healthy. Edmonton is a much better team now, I believe. Not just on paper, but the way they are playing. A much better team now than they were last year when they played Florida. And if you look at Florida now, are they a better team than where they were last year? I don't know. It's very close. They lose Montour. Okay, we bring in Seth Jones. Oh, we lose a guy in our bottom six. Here's Marchand. And that third line for Florida with Lindell and Marchand, it's been the best line maybe in the postseason. And my heart is completely torn on this because I'm a diehard Bruins fan and I want Brad Marchand to win another cup, but it's a great story to see Edmonton win as well. See McDavid, Draisaitl, they deserve a cup. They're two of the all-time great players of our era, of our generation. McDavid, if you're post-Crosby, he's the best player of the era. He needs a cup. He does. And they're back again. And how heartbreaking that loss was last year for Edmonton. For them to regroup, get off the mat, go through a gauntlet in the Western Conference, LA, Vegas, Dallas, and get back to a final is remarkable. So I can't wait for this final. But the one area we haven't touched on yet, which might determine the series, is the goaltending. Because everyone loves Stuart Skinner now, and I know we were harsh on Stuart Skinner a few weeks ago, but that was following that Vegas game when they had a chance to go up 3-0. And he made that dumb play. And Riley Smith, I think, scored with like 0.1 seconds left. It was a disaster. And it was the game where Pickard wasn't healthy to go, so they had to go to Stuart Skinner. But Stuart Skinner's played great. What can I say? He still has his Stuart Skinner moments, like game one against Dallas. That's inexcusable. They were up 3-1 going to the third period, and not just him. They were taking penalties, and Dallas were constantly on the power play, but they could not get a stop from Stuart Skinner at all. So that's still a concern for me. I know he's playing great. He either has a shutout or lets in one goal, or he lets in seven. And recently, he's been playing much better and just letting in one goal or getting a shutout. But I am still worried if I'm Edmonton, because Sergei Bobrovsky has won a Stanley Cup. He's won, what, two Vezinas? I don't think three. He's won two Vezinas, one of the best goalies in the world. So I have a pretty good idea what I'm getting from Sergei Bobrovsky. Stuart Skinner, it's either he's going to play great and we're going to play great in front of him, or if we let in one chance, they're going to score. I really think there's no in-between when it comes to Stuart Skinner. I don't. It's very interesting. This series can go either way. I can't wait. And nothing against the possibility of it going five games. I just don't see it happening. I see this being a long, drawn-out series. Six, seven games for sure. It's just what I see. It's just what I feel. And I've heard pundits say, oh, I think Florida in five, Florida in six. I might be seeing seven games again. And what really interests me was the coincidence that when Gretzky won his first cup, he lost to the Islanders the year before, played the Islanders the year after and won. Crosby, when he won his first cup, went to the finals the year before, played Detroit, lost to Detroit, beat Detroit the next year. Now with McDavid, played Florida in the finals last year and lost, gets them again. Coincidence? Who knows? No idea. Here was Connor McDavid following the Edmonton Oilers win in Game 5 in Dallas to head back to the Stanley Cup Final.
Nine defensemen, you got 14 forwards now that have scored. You got 11 guys with three or more goals. Just a thought on the amount of depth and how many good players you have that contributed to you guys going on this 12-2 run the last 14 games.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's been winning us hockey games. And you need that this time of year. We knew we were going to need everybody. Both goalies have given us a chance every night. And our depth has been incredible, and we've been playing good hockey, good solid hockey throughout the entire lineup, and obviously this time of year you need that, and I think so far we've done a great job of that.
Right side front row, Mark.
Connor, we all know how last season ended. Why do you think this is the team to make this season end differently?
Well, I think we were better for going through last year, you know. It was a great learning experience, and it's really driven us all year. I think this run has felt different than last year. It's felt very normal. It's felt very, I don't want to say boring, because it's not boring at all, but just a little, you know, it hasn't been as emotional. You know, we haven't had the highs and we haven't had the lows. Just kind of been steady. You know, and I think that's put us in a good position. You know, those games can be emotionally draining. We're not drained. As Bob referenced, we've got lots of depth. You know, we've got as good a chance as they do. Yeah.
So that's Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Forgot to mention Leon Draisaitl after the Game 5 victory in Dallas. And he's right. Last year's postseason, there are the ups and downs and everything. For Edmonton, was very emotional just to get to the finals, let alone that Stanley Cup final itself. This year, yes, they had the hiccups early in the LA series, but like they mentioned, since Game 3 of the first round against the LA Kings, they're 12-2. One of the losses was whatever the hell Stuart Skinner was doing, and Vegas scored with 0.1 seconds left in Edmonton. And the other one was Game 1 against Dallas, when they had a 3-1 lead, and then they take all the all the penalties in the third period, and that was the hockey game. But Edmonton, man, this is a different hockey team, and Connor McDavid said it. They're on a four-game winning streak right now. They lost game one, won four in a row. Even when you think they're down, like, that loss was crazy. When they lost game one, I was thinking, oh my God, like, that's a disaster. They let that one slip. And I remember McDavid, after they won game two, he's like, hey, I know that one sucked, but when we came to Dallas, we wanted to leave with a split, and we got a split. That was their mentality. And then they came, and they went back home, won the two games at home, and had home ice for the rest of the series. And they didn't even need to go back to Edmonton. They took care of business in Dallas. So to me, this is a far different Edmonton Oilers team. And let's see. And we'll have a good sample size next show. We're going to have, what, game one, two? Will we get game three as well? No, we'll get the first two games. Game three in Florida will be next Monday. So we'll have the first two games in Edmonton as our sample size next week to see if we're on track. If this is a different Oilers team, can Stuart Skinner step up? How will the supporting cast play for both teams? We'll have all of those answers after first two games. And yeah, I can't wait. Should be awesome. Quickly over to the NBA. And it's a sad day for the NBA itself. I'm talking about for the front office of the NBA, because they were one series away from maybe breaking a TV record, having the Knicks go to an NBA Finals. Even if they weren't even going to play the Lakers. They weren't going to play a big market team. They weren't playing the Golden State Warriors. They would have been playing the Oklahoma City Thunder. But the NBA, trust me, were dying to have the Knicks make the finals there. With Chalamet and Spike Lee and Ben Stiller and Jon Stewart, just every A-list New Yorker courtside trying to see the Knicks win their first title since the early 70s. That was the story. But credit the Indiana Pacers. They are going to the NBA Finals. They beat the Knicks in six games. And it's easy to point out one thing that changed this whole series. It's easy for just to say, oh, that was when they lost the series. But I feel like in this case, in this series between Indiana and New York, we can look at one thing that determined the series. And that was game one. The Knicks, game one was over. The Knicks were up a million points. It's the fourth quarter. The Garden's rocking. They have taken all the momentum from that Boston series, put it in the game one, and they were ready to take a 1-0 lead. But Aaron Nesmith got all-time hot for the Indiana Pacers, and Halliburton got hot, and they closed that gap. Like, I've never seen a gap close in the final minute of a game. 3 minutes of a game. Aaron Nesmith goes for 30. They come all the way back. Halliburton hitting the tying shot. Going to overtime and them winning in overtime. That was the end of the New York Knicks, in my opinion. And we've seen that before. I remember when, was it in 2018, when the Cavs, when LeBron had one of the great games of all time, and then J.R. Smith messes up the rebound. That one slipped, and then you knew they weren't going to win the series. I had the same feeling. And then Siakam went crazy in game two. Then they took a 2-0 series lead to Indiana. But credit the Knicks. They took one game from there, still stayed alive, forced the game six, winning game five at home. But that was the series, in my opinion. When they stole game one and Siakam went crazy in game two, and all the Pacers had to do was win two out of three home games the rest of the series, I knew it was over. And that's just a hard, hard loss for a New York Knicks fan. Just brutal. And now the question for the New York Knicks is, we'll get into the Pacers and the Thunder in a second. The question for the New York Knicks become, what do you do? Because by New York Knicks standards, this is an unbelievable season. This is their first Eastern Conference final in God knows how long, since the early 2000s. And another thing, no one thought they would make the NBA Finals. I remember last year when they traded for Bridges, they brought in Karl-Anthony Towns. They're like, oh, I mean, Boston's still the best team. And a good season for the Knicks would be like a conference finals. The Knicks went to the conference finals. And maybe it's because they had home court and they didn't play the Cavs and they beat Boston and they drew Indiana. People are going to think they let that title slip away. But I don't know. To me, this is a very successful year for the New York Knicks. You have the face of your franchise, your superstar, Jalen Brunson. Karl-Anthony Towns, as bad as he has been at times, especially he hasn't been up to his defensive standards, he's been a good player. OG Anunoby's been a great player. The Mikal Bridges, listen, did they give up too much to get him? Probably. But he's a nice player. They have good pieces. Mitchell Robinson, they have good pieces. So if I'm the Knicks, I would look to tinker a bit with the roster. I would keep Thibodeau. The thoughts of them firing Thibodeau, he leads you to the conference finals. You are a top 3 seed in the Eastern Conference. That seems tough. Who are you going to bring in that's better than Tom Thibodeau? That's my question. Who? There's not many other options. Who's available? Maybe I'm just not thinking, or they do I don't know if they do that in the NBA where you trade for coaches. But I don't know who's better than Tom Thibodeau right now. Now, they could explore trading for Giannis, but that would end up having, I don't know, what kind of an impact. Will Jalen Brunson and Giannis lead them to a title? And if you think about what they have to give up, you're giving up Anunoby. You're probably giving up Bridges. You're going to give up the few draft picks you have left for the next 4 years because of the Bridges deal. Does Towns go? I don't know how much Milwaukee will want in a Giannis trade. But it is interesting to see what the Knicks do. To me, I think the team's fine. I would run it back, maybe make some other small moves on the roster, not going and getting an all-star, just getting some depth pieces. That's what I would do. Because I think Brunson and Cat with Bridges and Anunoby and all those guys, that's a very talented basketball team and a team that was 2 games away from the NBA Finals. Now, if it doesn't work next year, okay. You want to blow it up, fair enough. But this is the first year of the new look Knicks and you're already going to blow it up. I don't know. I think Knicks fans are just bent out of shape. They get through Boston. They think, oh my God, we get Indiana. We're going to the final. And then they lose that series. It's a lot to take in. But for a franchise that has been so bad for so long, them making changes now, after this year, is a little bit strong for me. Now, I don't know if they can get Giannis on a great, great trade. You only have to give up a few pieces. If Anunoby and Cat and a few picks are enough, okay. But I don't think that's the case. You're probably going to have to give up an arm and a leg for him. Everyone but Brunson. Is that worth it? I don't know. But it's still a great year for the New York Knicks. To act like this wasn't a successful season and you got to blow the whole thing up and it's the end of the world now. I don't know. What happens if the Knicks made the finals and then they play Oklahoma City, who's having one of the great seasons in recent memory, and they lose? Are you going to blow things up? You made the finals. Are you going to blow things up? That's basically what we're talking about here. In Indiana, nothing against Indiana. I think they're going to play well. But Oklahoma City is the favorites, as they should be. I want to know, if the Knicks got through this series, would Knicks fans be begging to blow things up? It's the first year. The first year with Towns there, with Bridges there, Brunson. I know Brunson and Anunoby have been there. But the first year with Cat, Bridges, and Brunson, and you go to a conference final. If you look at the Celtics a few years ago, remember they couldn't get over the hump? Oh, trade Brown. Oh, just get rid of Jaylen Brown. Get rid of Tatum. Keep Brown. Get rid of whatever. And then eventually it was, okay, we can't get over the line. You keep Tatum. You trade Brown. Then they lose to Miami in a conference final. Oh, my God. You have to get rid of Jaylen Brown. What does Brad Stevens do? He makes smart changes. He realized, I've got these two guys, and I'll build around them. He go gets a Drew Holiday. He go gets a Derek White. He gets a Kristaps Porzingis. He gets other pieces around those guys to build out the roster. If I'm the Knicks, I don't think I have to go and make a ridiculous trade, give up my two of my three star players to get someone with Brunson. I don't think that's smart. To me, you keep the core, whoever you want to include in the core. I would keep Brunson, obviously. I would keep Kat for another year. I'd keep Bridges for another year. And I keep Anunoby. I'm sorry. I'm keeping those four guys. Now, if you want to make moves with the other guys, fair enough. But the Knicks aren't a deep team to begin with. They only run 7-8 quality players anyway. So to me, what I would do, keep that four and try and tinker on the outside. Now, will it be harder to do because you gave up so much in that Bridges trade and so many picks? Yes. But get creative. Try and get him some shooters. Is Josh Hart expendable? I don't know. But that's the kind of moves I'd look to make. I wouldn't look to just totally change the roster after 1 year together and they made a conference final. I don't. Maybe Thibodeau in the regular season reduces their minutes because they play a ton of minutes in the regular season. A ton. So it's interesting. I don't know what the Knicks are going to do, but to me, I'd keep Thibodeau, tell him, hey, maybe reduce minutes in the regular season so they're ready to roll come the playoff time, and tinker with numbers 5 through 8 on the Knicks roster. But I'd keep Brunson, keep Kat, keep Anunoby, keep Bridges, and see what we can do. Now, if it doesn't work after 2 years, maybe a third, okay, make changes. But after 1 year and you make the conference final, it seems a bit premature to make a move there. But congrats to Indiana. What a lineup they have. Halliburton was phenomenal. Pascal Siakam, former Toronto Raptor, he was fantastic. He won the Eastern Conference Finals MVP, what they call the Larry Bird Trophy, whatever. They probably should have given it to Halliburton. But Siakam was awesome, especially in Game 2. He was amazing. But Game 4 of Halliburton, he was flawless. He didn't even have a turnover. It was like 30 points, triple-double, no turnovers. I want the exact stat line of that game. Halliburton was unbelievable. He was 32, 15 assists, 12 rebounds, no turnovers. But Siakam dropped 30 that game as well. And Siakam went absolutely crazy in Game 2. Dropped 39. So it's not like it was a bad pick at all. It's not egregious not to give it to Halliburton, but I was a bit surprised when Pascal Siakam won the Finals MVP. He's a hell of a player, and he played amazing. But I'm just surprised Halliburton didn't win it. I really am. But Indiana, that's an interesting story. And before the year started, I did a little NBA preview on the Tommy John Show Instagram. You can check. I still thought the Celtics were going to get back to the finals, but I said my other teams to watch out for are obviously the Knicks, but the Indiana Pacers. And a year removed from them making the Eastern Conference Finals, they are in the NBA Finals. So shout out to Indiana. Love the way their roster is built. Obi Toppin doing just everything on the court. Against the Knicks, too, I found that very funny. He's just an energizer bunny. He doesn't score a lot of points, but when he's out there, he's entertaining. Ben Eric Mathurin. This TJ McConnell guy's fun to watch. Aaron Nesmith just hits threes. Miles Turner's unbelievable defensively. They're just a well-constructed basketball team. And Rick Carlisle is one of, what, the three or five best coaches in the NBA? He is that good. So credit the Indiana Pacers. And also credit the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are going to the NBA Finals. That series, we didn't really talk much about it, but there was not much to talk about. Minnesota was just not in the Thunder's class. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was too good. And just the depth the Thunder have is remarkable. Jalen Williams is remarkable. Chet Holmgren. Caruso's making good plays. Lou Dort and Hardenstein defensively. It's just awesome. But Jalen Williams, he was remarkable in game. Was that game four? Was it game four? He was great. Shea was great the whole series. And they have a nice little thing going in Oklahoma City. And to think that they're the best team in the NBA and they still have an endless supply of draft picks. Like, they have endless supply of draft picks because of the Paul George deals and previous trades they've made. They just, it never ends. So they have the best team in the league already, and then they have the most assets in the NBA. And general manager Sam Presti's got to be loving this. He's got to be loving this. Sam Presti, who's just made some phenomenal moves, phenomenal trades, and now the Thunder are set up for a long, long time. But first, they got to take on the Indiana Pacers. And I'd still favor the Thunder in that series just because all year they've been the best team. But we got to stop sleeping on Indiana. They're finally in the every series. When they played Cleveland, they were huge underdogs. They were underdogs when they played the Knicks. They might have been underdogs when they played the Bucks too. I don't remember. But people got to stop sleeping on them. Haliburton's a star. Pascal Siakam's a star, and they got a great surrounding cast with one of the best coaches in the NBA. So you got to stop sleeping on the Indiana Pacers. We got to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk about the French Open. Scottie Scheffler getting another win on the PGA Tour. What are his chances at Oakmont and the U.S. Open in 2 weeks' time? And some big news in the NFL. We'll get to it all next on the Tommy John Show right after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Festival International Mud'Afrique, presented by TD, invites you to the 39th edition for the best of world music, from July 8th to 20th. For 13 days, Montreal will be dancing and singing to the rhythms of Africa, the Caribbean, and Latin America. Full program and tickets on festivalmud'afrique.com.
Stay tuned to CJLO 1690, Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon, for Montreal's most diversified gospel show, Gospel Unlimited. Join Ray, Tanisha, and Curtis as they take you on a musical journey and share stimulating conversations along the way. Don't miss it. Saturday mornings, 10 to noon, Gospel Unlimited.
Back here in the Tommy John Show. So the French Open, we're on to the second week at Roland Garros, and surprising result just in here, the number 5 seed, Jack Draper, he loses today in the round of 16 to Alexander Bubik of Kazakhstan in 4 sets, 5-7, 6-3, 6-2, 6-4, and he was the number 5 seed, so that was a big surprise. Alexander Zverev, the number 3 seed, who's made a final or made a semi here. Or no, he made a final. Yeah, he made the finals last year and lost to Alcaraz. He's into the quarterfinal. He won 6-4 and then 3-love as Griekspoor from the Netherlands had to pull out. Novak Djokovic playing unbelievable tennis at the minute. He takes down Cam Nori in straight sets, 6-2, 6-3, 6-2. And he was struggling earlier in the year, wasn't really getting anything going with Andy Murray as his coach. They mutually part ways. Then he won the pre-tournament in Switzerland. And now he's into the quarterfinals of the French Open. Yannick Sinner plays in about 45 minutes against Rublev at 2:15. Over to the women's side for today. Madison Keys, the number 7 seed from the U.S. 6-3, 7-5. She is on to the quarterfinal. The number 3 seed, Jessica Pegula, falling today to the Frenchman, Louis Boisson. So that's a surprise. The number 3 seed's out. And Mira Andreeva, who's just playing fantastic tennis at the minute, she is into the quarterfinals. She won 6-3, 7-5 today over Daria Kazakina from Australia. And Coco Gauff into the quarterfinals as well. She won today over Alexandrova, 6-love, 7-5. So we head to tomorrow with the quarterfinal matchups. We have the number 1 seed, Andrea Sabalenka, against Kui Jung Jang, the number 8 seed from China. Then Andreeva's playing Boisson. Madison Keys and Coco Gauff, the two Americans, in the other quarterfinal. And Iga Swiatek, looking for, what, 4 in a row at the French Open? She will be taking on Elena Svitolina from Ukraine in the other quarterfinal matchup. To the men's side, Carlos Alcaraz and Ben Shelton played a phenomenal match yesterday. Alcaraz getting it done in 4 sets. And Shelton said he hasn't really played. Like, that was one of the best matches he played, and he still was enough for Alcaraz. So the number 2 seed, Carlos Alcaraz, the defending champion, he takes on Tommy Paul tomorrow at around 2:15. It'll be Zverev and Djokovic, Musetti and Francis Tiafoe on a surface that's not usually his best. Francis Tiafoe is in the French Open quarterfinal, and then we are waiting on Yannick Sinner in that match. Nothing against Rublev, but you got to favor Sinner in that one. We're still waiting to see who Bublik will play. But as it looks right now, Bublik and Sinner in the other quarterfinal, but it could be the Russian Andrei Rublev. So that's where we stand in the French Open heading into the quarterfinals. So we'll talk about that next week, about who won the tournament, the semifinal matches, and all that next week on the Tommy John Show. Like we mentioned briefly, Scottie Scheffler getting another win on the PGA Tour. His 3rd win in his last 4 starts. He won the Byron Nelson in early May, followed that up with the PGA Championship. Then he had a decent result at Colonial. I forget where he finished. And then he wins Jack Nicklaus Tournament, the Memorial, an elevated event. And he is firing on all cylinders. I know he had that hand injury, re-injured his hand in December, and it took him a while to get into it, but since the Masters, he's been on fire. He was okay at the Heritage, but since the Masters, he's just been on a tear. 3 wins in his last 4 starts, and if you're Scottie Scheffler, you got to be thinking, if I just play the way I'm playing, if I just don't hit the ball in the rough, I'm going to win the U.S. Open going away. Now, I know Rory wasn't in the field, and Rory's been kind of been distracted since winning the Grand Slam at the Masters, and rightfully so. He's worked his whole career to win that golf tournament, and he did, and he takes a few weeks off, and his game's not totally up to par. But we'll see how he responds. He's playing in Canada this week, Rory. The Canadian Open, cannot wait for that at TPC Osprey Valley in Toronto. That should be fun, and it's a really good field. Big names, which is great to see. And I hope the Canadian Open gets elevated status. I do. It's a national open. The Scottish Open's an elevated event, and obviously the U.S. Open's a major. I think the Canadian Open, it's a national tournament, should be an elevated event in a few years. That's just me. But if you're Rory, he said he's been practicing. He had to pull out of the Memorial. He has a busy schedule coming up because it's this week the Canadian Open. Next, the 2 weeks from now is the U.S. Open, and then the Travelers, another elevated event. So he wanted to play 1 week prior to the U.S. Open and then go into the U.S. Open. But here we are. And I don't know what Rory we're gonna get, but he hasn't played since the PGA. So that's been, what, 2 or 3 weeks now? So he said he's just been with his swing coach, getting his swing back to where it was at Augusta. So if Rory's playing like he was earlier in the year, then of course he's going to have a great chance. And obviously Bryson DeChambeau, who won the U.S. Open last year. He's won two U.S. Open titles. With thick rough and hitting the ball far, he's going to be right there. And a name I think people need to watch out for, just because he's playing very good golf at the minute, is this Ben Griffin guy. Now, is he going to win a major championship? I don't know. But he won last week at the Charles Schwab, and he was in the final group yesterday with Scotty. And he had the lead after the first round, and it was just a lot of weird things that happened on that Sunday. But once you saw the leaderboard, nothing against Seb Straka or Canadian Nick Taylor or Maverick McNealy or Ben Griffin. You see all those names and you see Scotty Scheffler on the leaderboard, you know who's going to win that tournament. And Jack Nicklaus really said it the other day, too. He said, hey, I hate to say this, but those guys are nice players. Scotty's a different level. And he is. He's the number one player in the world. Him and Rory and Xander, when healthy, are just on a different planet. But right now, this year, they both have three wins. They both have a major championship. Look at those years. They both have an elevated event. So Scotty's one. If we're going to go player of the year based on right now, it would probably be Rory. But it is really close because Scotty has won the Byron Nelson, the PGA Championship, so there's a major, and an elevated event, the Memorial. Rory's won Pebble Beach, so an elevated event, the Players, which is like the fifth major, and the Masters. So just based on that, I think Rory has won the better, the more quality tournaments. He's won the best major, the biggest major, the Masters. He's won the biggest tournament on the PGA Tour, the Players, and he won an elevated event at Pebble Beach. So they both have three wins. If it continues like this, though, even Scotty's going to win Player of the Year because he's going to have three wins left in him easy. So that's why I want Rory to get his swing ready. If Rory swings ready, he should play well, should be in contention in Canada this weekend, and he should be in good shape going to the U.S. Open. And he, trust me, wants to be in good shape for the Open Championship at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland. He wants to be ready for that. So we'll see. Trust me, this golf year is going to be amazing down the stretch. Canadian Open this weekend for us people in Canada is fun. You got the U.S. Open. You still got another major and the Ryder Cup, which may be the most hyped up Ryder Cup in recent memory just because how well the European players are playing. Rory's playing amazing. Shane Lowry, Sepp Straka has won twice on the PGA Tour. Just they have so many good players. Victor Hovland, Ludvig Åberg. There's some people who are making them the favorites. At Bethpage Black in New York against the U.S. after they smoke the Americans in Europe. This is one of the most hyped up Ryder Cups in a long time. So the rest of this golf year is going to be remarkable, and I cannot wait. But yeah, the Canadian Open this week at Osprey Valley and near, I guess, a little bit outside Toronto should be fun. But next week, we'll get a golf expert on, preview the U.S. Open at Oakmont, one of the hardest courses in America. To me, the U.S. Open, I know they like to go all over the place. They should just keep it at like five courses. Pebble Beach, Pinehurst, Oakmont, Shinnecock, and then you can pick maybe two others. Maybe you throw in like a Wingfoot or another course like that. But to me, those are the U.S. Open venues. Pebble Beach is iconic. The Shinnecock and Oakmont, that's just Wingfoot. Those are just country club, U.S. Open golf. We're going to grow the hell out of the rough, and we're going to make the greens faster than anywhere on earth, and the winning score is going to be a 2-under, maybe 1-under par. And then Pinehurst is just one of the iconic U.S. Open venues, and then we can find another one. That's what I would do. But I get it. They want to go around the country. The country club was a fun U.S. Open. There's been a LACC that, to me, that was kind of a weird one. It was like a weird course layout. The scores were too high for U.S. Open. I don't want a U.S. Open champion at double-digit under par. I want a U.S. Open winner and the winning score to be anywhere from even to 3-under, 4-under for the tournament. I don't like these PGA Tour events. That's why the Memorial, I kind of liked it. Okay, Scotty got the 10 under par, but top five, you were 2 under for the tournament. Sepp Straka was third. He finished at 5 under for the tournament. How many times do you see people shoot 6 under, 7 under a round? Like, seriously. That's the kind of conditions I like. Like, Byron Nelson tournament, Scottie Scheffler was 31 under par. Like, no. I want a hard test. We don't get that many on the PGA Tour. We get Arnold Palmer's tournament. We get Jack Nicklaus tournament at the Memorial. That's pretty much what we get for hard golf courses. So that's why the U.S. Open is just so much fun to watch, because you're seeing the best players in the world struggle on the hardest venues. So that's my little U.S. Open rant there. Cannot wait for that. But you'd be foolish right now to not pick Scottie Scheffler as the favorite. He might be at, like, plus 200, plus 150 to win at Oakmont in 2 weeks' time. That's how good he's playing. We're going to take our second break, but when we come back, we will talk a bit about the NFL. Some big news going on there. We will get into that. And also, shout out to Paris Saint-Germain winning their first ever UEFA Champions League title. They dismantled Inter Milan on Saturday over the weekend. They get their first, I can't believe that, Paris Saint-Germain's first Champions League title. Crazy. So when we come back, we'll do some NFL talk here on the Tommy John Show. Do not go away.
Êtes-vous motivé à vous engager au sujet des enjeux de violence de partenaire intime? Participez à l'Assemblée annuelle générale de Femmes Averties le 8 juin 2025 sur Zoom pour découvrir les divers projets nos survivantes et nos bénévoles ont dirigés cette année. Que ce soit des formations personnalisées avec des partenaires ou des projets communautaires engageants, on a hâte à partager avec le public nos recherches et ce qu'on a accompli. Pour s'inscrire à l'Assemblée générale annuelle, visitez notre site web www.womenaware.ca ou nos réseaux sociaux à womenaware.mtl. Femmes averties, par les survivantes, pour les survivantes.
The Go-Go Radio Magic Show. Every Friday night from 6 till 8 on 3JLO. Tune in. Turn on. Freak out.
And look at that born rich fed with a silver spoon trust fund kid like you did. So when you die, I hope you come back as a redneck. I hope it sticks on you like a hell hot sun tattoo. I hope you break your back for that barely get by paycheck. And when you can't, you gotta go and bloody up a book or two.
Right back here on the Tommy John Show. We'll get a bit into Major League Baseball as well. Quickly look at the standings and look at the Toronto Blue Jays shooting up that. Looking up the standings. They are playing some good baseball. I know it helps when you play the Oakland A's for a 4-game series. You're like, oh, look, the Blue Jays are on fire. Now maybe they just played the A's. But irrelevant, they've won five in a row. They're still 5.5 back of the Yankees, but if you look at the wild card picture, they're only half a game back of Minnesota for that last wild card spot. So the Blue Jays very much in it. They are 3 games over .500, which is a good place to be, and they've got a big series coming up this weekend against the Philadelphia, or this week I should say, against the Philadelphia Phillies, who are right now, what, the third or fourth best team in baseball. They're having a rough stretch now. They've lost 4 in a row, but that, they're still playing over .600 baseball. So watch out for the Phillies and the Jays this week. That's a huge series going on in Toronto. We quickly go around the rest of the American League. The Detroit Tigers still cruising atop the Central. They have a 6-game lead over the Cleveland Guardians. They are 39-21. 650 baseball, 39-21. They have a 6-game lead over the Guardians, 7 games over the Twins. The Central's, apart from the White Sox, every team's over .500. The Royals are in fourth place, and they're playing .517 baseball. The Mariners leading the way in the West, only a half game up, though, on the Houston Astros, 4 games up on the Texas Rangers. Quickly over to the National League, the Mets are 8-2 in their last 10. They are 37-22. They have a 1-game lead over the Phillies, like we mentioned, who have slipped a bit. 1 game back, though. They've lost 4 in a row, and they're still playing over .600 baseball. So the Phillies in second, and do not rule out the possibility of the Phillies and the Mets maybe meeting once again in the playoffs. The reason I say that is last year's series was so entertaining between them. I'm just trying to wish that into existence. To the Central, the Cubs are rolling atop of the Central. They have a 4-game lead on the St. Louis Cardinals. They are playing .627 baseball, 37-22. The Dodgers leading the way in the West, a 2-game lead over the San Diego Padres, and a 3-game lead over the San Francisco Giants. So that's your quick little Major League Baseball rundown. Quickly to the NFL, and if big news for people who play video games, Saquon Barkley, the cover athlete for Madden NFL 26, going to be getting a few copies for my Giants friends and handing it to them, see their reaction. And also, a big news in the NFL today, the Lions all-pro center, Frank Ragnow, he's renouncing his retirement from football at the age of 29. All-pro center, retiring at 29, I'm telling you, with amount of injuries and the amount of abuse these guys take, we're going to see a lot more players retire in their late 20s, early 30s. Once they get their first big contract, they get their generational money, they get their $50-plus million, what's the point? And they just step away. Other big news in the National Football League, Stephon Diggs, after that whole wild scenario on the boat with Cardi B and those other people, there were substances on board, whatever, all that situation. He was at optional OTAs today. So Frank Vrabel said he would talk to him. He talked to him. And the Boston media wanted him to get cut and all that stuff. Listen, let's calm down here. I know it's not the greatest look in the world, but he deserved to have a conversation with the head coach. And he had it with Mike Vrabel. And he's at practice today. That's the way Mike Vrabel goes. I'm telling you, he's a hard-nosed coach. He's a player's coach. He understands it. He was a player once too, wanted to have some fun. So that's why I think it's a match made in heaven for the Patriots in this current form of the Patriots, because they had the Belichick era, where there's no nonsense. And Gerard Mayo, to me, was just the total other extreme. There was just no accountability. Now you get Mike Vrabel, who's a player's coach, and he makes him accountable. I'm sorry. Belichick, at the end, it's like, hey, can I go and get ice cream? Can I go to a bar? Just being mad. Speaking of Belichick, heard he's engaged to that 24-year-old. She's my age. Bill Belichick was coaching the Patriots before I was born. Now he's engaged to a girl my age? That's crazy. And also, big news in the NFL, Haley Steinfeld and Josh Allen got married this weekend, for people who care. The reason I mentioned, though, the Bill Belichick thing is, North Carolina, if this continues with more stories, I wonder if he gets to week one. Because there are so many headlines coming out of North Carolina now, it's becoming a distraction. Now, I know people live in the lifestyle now of any publicity is good publicity, But are players going to go to North Carolina if they offer them a bunch of money with this gong show going on? I don't know. But with that schedule and in that conference in the ACC, there's still no excuse to have a winning record. There is zero excuse for Belichick and the Tar Heels. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on CJLO, 1690 a.m. in Montreal, where we'll talk about the first two games of the Stanley Cup Finals and the NBA Finals, as well as recapping the French Open and previewing the U.S. Open in golf. I'm Tommy Lane. Thank you so much for listening, and I will speak to you all next week.
You're listening to CJLO.